The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome to The Big Show. And by The Big Show, I mean, of course, The Dory Monson Show. This is Brandy Cruz filling in for my friend Dory Monson for a second day in a row. I want to get some... I'm worried about my friend. He's under the weather, isn't he? Nicole, still under the weather?
He's still a little under the weather, He's fine. It's not, you know... Don't be worried about him in the hospital, COVID, nothing like that.
Everybody
he's just under the weather.
Everybody gets sick. That's what we're here for. But I do, can I get a little, maybe some soft, maybe piano music or something? What do you got? That's lovely. That's nice. You know, I spent a lot of time yesterday thinking about my friend Dory. And I've written a little poem for him that I'd like to share with all of you right now.
You should have given me a heads up. I would have made sure he was listening.
Oh, no. I put a lot of effort into this and have a little anxiety about sharing it. I don't usually share my poetry with the public, so hopefully the text line is kind. Here it goes. Dear Dory, I hope you feel better soon. Your viewers really miss you.
Listeners.
Your listeners really miss you at noon. The end. That's it.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. You interrupted it, but that's fine. People can view us in the studio.
A little edit. I guess so.
I put a lot of effort into that.
I did still find it quite moving.
Thank you. I put a lot of effort into that. enough of the sappiness, because we got a lot of news to get to here in The Big Lead. We don't want the piano music for this. I promise you that. Well, we want to get to some breaking local news first in The Big Lead. We're going to talk about President Biden just spoke momentarily, just a couple minutes ago, about his new steps to combat the coronavirus into the winter months. But we've got some big local news that we want to get to first. Cairo Radio's Heather Bosch is here in the studio with us. Of course, we've been talking about on the newscast today, three Everett area schools on high alert after some threats on social media. That includes Explorer Middle School, Mukilteo in the Mukilteo School District, Mariner High, and Voyager Middle School as well. And we also heard, Heather, that a 14-year-old was arrested, accused of making these threats. That suspect now facing six felony charges. You've just spoken with the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office. What do we know about this 14-year-old?
Yeah, we're learning a little more. Apparently, this 14-year-old was a student at one of those schools formerly. It's unclear why he or she, they're not saying the gender, but why this individual made the threat. But, of course, they took it seriously.
It's not a joke to post something like this on social media. It's taken very seriously. Lives have been lost due to school shootings. And we absolutely want people to understand that they will be held accountable and this should not be considered a joke or a hoax.
And if you make a threat, even on social media, in this case it was an anonymous post, they will track you down.
Through search warrants, they were able to identify the device that the social media post was originated from and linked to that device belongs to.
They turned up at the 14-year-old's own house and made the arrest last night. They booked that person into juvenile detention on six felony counts.
And obviously they're taking it seriously. And one of the things that we were warned about, and we've seen this after school shootings, of course, there was that horrible tragedy in Michigan.
Yesterday, yeah.
And a 15-year-old named Ethan Crumbly was arrested in that. At least four dead, seven others injured. And so there's always these warnings after that happens to be on the alert for increased threats on social media. And I don't know if that's what's contributed, as you said, to these threats online, but you know, parents should know who are monitoring kids' social media. Law enforcement will take this to the full extent
of
the law.
They have to, given what happened yesterday. Four people were killed and several injured. So they're going to take this seriously. They're going to be able to track you down and you're going to get into trouble. So you can look at your kid and say, well, he or she's 14. They don't know much. You know, mom and dad, if you can, you have got to crack down on that kind of thing. And there's a temptation by some to do this after there's been, you know, a lot of talk about school shootings. They happen a lot. But because there have been shootings, it's going to be taken seriously.
Yeah, horrible all the way around. Good on the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office for getting to the bottom of that quickly. Again, a 14-year-old is under arrest facing six felony charges, accused of sending, posting threatening things on social media. Three Everett area schools are on high alert because of those threats. Cairo Radio's Heather Bosch, thank you so much.
Anytime.
All right, up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top national.
hearing from President Biden. You recall we had yesterday on the show that the president spoke and he said, I'll have another announcement tomorrow. We were wondering what that would be. And it turns out it's just sort of his roadmap, I guess, for how he's going to address COVID in the winter months. The president outlining a variety of different steps, including expanding vaccinations to remaining Americans. You know, I don't know what exactly that is going to entail. I believe at this point, most Americans who haven't got the vaccine, that is probably by choice. Although the president did say something that really caught our attention. And I'm not sure if this is true or where he's getting this information.
There's some evidence in one poll. I won't mention it because I'm not positive of the number. I was told this as I was leaving the White House, that there is an expectation that 30% of the non-vaxxers said under no circumstances would I get a vaccination. Because of the new variant, are now saying I'm going to get a vaccination. So we hope that's true. I hope that's true.
Very odd. He cites a poll, says he's not going to say which poll it was, that he doesn't know the numbers. I find it very hard to believe that people who have given up their careers over a vaccine mandate would then relent to vaccines because of a new variant.
It seems less deadly, less scary.
Well, that we don't know much about, frankly. Yeah. And so I'd be curious to, Nicole, see if you can find any semblance of a poll that matches the president's description of
it.
That poll. I'd be very interested to see where that's coming from. Also interesting, you know, the president came out and he's talking about these new measures, and I'll get more into those, a bunch of little things. But he again, and he said this previously, that there are no plans for lockdowns during the holiday season.
And it doesn't include shutdowns or lockdowns, but widespread vaccinations and boosters and testing and a lot more.
Now, that's really interesting. One, because the president isn't the only one with the authority to do a lockdown. Of course, governors have the authority to put mandates into effect. So the president can say, hey, we're not going to do a national lockdown or shutdown. But that doesn't mean that governors have the same, you know, or of the same mind. But the other thing is, just a little bit before President Biden said that, reiterated, you know, no lockdowns, Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, spoke, and she was asked about, you know, why not do something, you know, go further with some of these mandates. And she seems to not be taking some sort of lockdown or shutdown off the table.
Why not go further in the direction of you know, public health and mandates, given the potential risk and the fact that we're headed into winter?
Sure. Well, one, I would say that nothing is off the table. Including domestic travel.
Nothing is off the table, including domestic travel. And what that says to me is that you would restrict the flow of people from state to state. That sounds like a lockdown to me. If you're locking people down in their own state, yet the president, just an hour or so later, says this.
And it doesn't include shutdowns or lockdowns, but widespread vaccinations and boosters and testing and a lot more.
Yeah, just another example. We see this so many times of the president saying something that directly conflicts with what his White House press secretary is saying. And so they just never really seem to be quite on the same page. I don't know that I would feel comfortable believing anyone about what might happen into the future with coronavirus and with this new variant. It seems odd to me to even promise, oh, hey, there won't be lockdowns when, you know, everything changes so quickly. Nicole, any luck on that poll that the president mentioned?
I haven't found one yet.
Interesting. Okay, because it was quite a convenient poll for him to roll out there. One more soundbite I want to play here from the president talking about a very close relationship he's formed with Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I've seen more of Dr. Fauci than I have my wife. We kid each other, but they look, who's president? Fauci. But all kidding aside, I sincerely mean it.
I don't know if he was calling Fauci his partner or the president. That was an interesting soundbite. The president did, by the way, as he was walking out, he didn't take any questions as part of this press conference, which we've, I guess, sort of gotten used to at this point in time. But he did stop. He was shouted at by reporters on the way out, and he did answer a couple questions kind of about the possibility of a government shutdown. So there's that. All right. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
There's this new poll that came out. It's something that Harvard Kennedy School does every year, and they do a national poll of Americans 18 to 29 years old started getting their finger on the pulse of what the youth of America are thinking these days. And there was some really interesting, I don't know if interesting is the word, concerning possibly is the word, results from this new poll. And one of them is that only 31% of youth in this poll believe that America is the greatest country in the world. I'm kind of thinking, what? I wish they had polled them on what country youth do think is the greatest country in the world. Later on this hour, we're going to talk about what's going on in Australia right now with COVID lockdowns. There's these three youth that absconded from a lockdown facility in Australia. And I'm thinking, would you rather live there?
Although that would have been near the top of my list before. I mean, not before the U.S., of course, but it would have been close to the top before COVID.
Yeah, and now you've got, and we're going to talk about it. What time are we going to talk about that today? 12:45?
Yes.
Yeah, these kids, they were in a lockdown facility, and they tested negative, but they were close contacts, and they absconded, and a full-fledged manhunt went for these three teenagers.
Which is interesting compared to today, where Biden announced that now kids can go back to school, even if they're exposed, as long as they're tested. So we're kind of laxing on that, and
compared to Australia, at least.
Yeah, in Australia are still quarantining their children.
I see the results of this poll that 31% of American youth believe that it's the greatest country in the world. And I just wonder, okay, where are the rest of you? Is 70% on that? Although there are a couple things in this poll that I actually do agree with the youngsters about. What was the age range for this? 29. Okay. I'm 33, so I'm just outside the realm of this poll. There are a few things I agree with them on. A majority of the young people who took this poll, 52%, believe that our democracy is either in trouble or failing. Now, I don't believe our democracy is failing. I do believe that it's a tad bit in trouble, or at least going toward that realm. I'm concerned about the state of elections. You know, from a variety of ways, but, you know, we can't even agree on how elections are done and the result of elections. I mean, if we have that much discord about the results of a presidential election still, you know, a year later, that concerns me quite a bit. Let's see. 35% of young Americans think they'll see a second civil war in their lifetime. 25% of youth believe that at least one state will leave the union. Huh. Which state would it be, Nicole? If one state were to leave the union, Texas?
Oh, yeah, possibly. I guess possibly. At this point, I think maybe Florida. They're going out on their own a little bit.
Florida's going to sink.
We're the most locked down. I feel like we've got some of the harshest, you know, rules for COVID. So, I don't know.
Interesting. I wonder, I wish they would have followed up. Well, what state do you think that would secede from the union? Also, young Americans, their approval rating of the president, not so good, according to this Harvard Kennedy School poll. Biden's approval rating among young Americans, 46%. A majority of youth disapprove with the way President Biden, Democrats, and Republicans in Congress are handling their job. And I agree with that. I've been very vocal about the fact that I dislike the two-party system. I believe that it results in you know, politicians who are not looking out for the best interest of Americans. And I, for one, would like to see a move towards a third party or an additional party, and we'll see. But young Americans seem a little disenfranchised by the two parties as well. Let's see. Is there any other result from this poll that I want to touch on? The climate change response is not interesting, not a surprise. More than half of young Americans report having felt down, depressed, and hopeless. Probably a lot because of the pandemic, I would imagine. I also think youth are more in touch with their mental health, which I don't think is a bad thing, as long as you're not being taught to be constantly, you know, sad and depressed. And I wonder how much of that is sort of
from the
internet and social media.
Yes, I was going to say social media impact on this, I think, because they see things that they think people's lives are consumed with, but really, you know, nobody's life is perfect. Yeah. That's what they think they're up against.
Very interesting. All right, let's continue in the big lead with trending. This is fascinating. So Kyle Rittenhouse, you guys might have heard this whole debate with Arizona State University. Nicole, is that your alma mater?
It is.
It is. Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you think about this. So Kyle Rittenhouse was enrolled in online classes at some point, and then there was sort of a he unenrolled because of the whole trial and all of that, and now apparently he's interested in enrolling again. Well, some students at Arizona State University say they don't want a, quote, killer as a possible classmate. There was a protest outside ASU where we'll talk about some of the signs they were holding in a minute, but protests outside ASU trying to get Rittenhouse not to come there.
Lock him up! Lock him up! Lock him up!
The American justice system does not acquit morality. They're not the objective morality in America. They're not. Nowhere. They're founded on genocide and chattel slavery. Their morality is based in white centricism. Their morality is based in white supremacy. So the American justice system does not work for people outside of that umbrella.
That's not what I experienced while I was there. I did not witness any of this.
ASU you went to?
It was a while ago.
So this protest is happening, right? And they're calling Kyle Rittenhouse a killer. Kyle Rittenhouse, of course, was acquitted by a jury of shooting and killing two people, injuring a third during protests, riots, actually, in Wisconsin. So this protest is happening. They're saying he's a killer. They don't want him there. And there's this guy. Oh, this picture. There's this guy holding a sign that says Death to America. And the two is a little number two, and it's got blood drops coming down from it. So you don't want Kyle Rittenhouse there because you think he's a killer, but you are holding a Death to America sign. It's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. I will say that there were some students who showed up in defense of Kyle Rittenhouse at this protest. One of them telling Fox News that she believes Kyle Rittenhouse has a right to self-defense, saying he's an American who has committed no crime. He contributes to society the way any other American contributes to society who is not imprisoned. It'll be interesting to see what happens here and to what extent Arizona State tries to insert itself in this situation. You know, it's one thing if Kyle Rittenhouse wants to make the decision not to go there because of these threats or because of, you know, what he's been dealing with. It's another thing if Arizona State University comes in and says this kid who was acquitted of charges is not allowed to come here. I don't know what's going to happen. Any idea, Nicole, what you're...
Kyle came out and said he was no longer enrolled, so they might not be forced to make that decision.
Well, apparently he wants to enroll again.
But, well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they'll tell him he's not welcome, but I don't know.
We will see. That is The Big Lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had an interesting answer when asked whether looting is due to the pandemic.
Hey, wait.
Also, Jason Rantz. Oh,
I was going to make sure you didn't forget about Jason.
He's going to come on to talk about his fascinating new report on how farmers markets and food charities are white supremacy in action. That's coming up on The Dory Monson Show. Disrespect. You know, I come in here working hard, Nicole's like, come fill in for Dory Monson, Brandy. I come in all the way from North Bend. The disrespect I just experienced in this studio. Jason Rantz, coughing into his microphone while I'm trying to talk. Jason Rantz walks in, and as opposed to hello, my dear friend Brandy Cruz, I get you're in my seat.
You were in my seat.
Rude.
That's the seat I normally use.
This is my seat today. And he goes over to the other microphone, just absolutely aghast that he has to sit in a different seat.
I feel uncomfortable in positions I'm not normally in.
Well, I like to make people uncomfortable. This is part of having a guest on. I want you to be a little uncomfortable so I outshine you.
Well, that's definitely not going to happen, but we could certainly try.
So you had an interesting story. I should have asked for the woke word dice. Does Dory still do the woke word dice segment?
He does.
Can I get the woke word dice sounder?
At
I don't have a backgammon keyboard.
Oh, Dory does
with
it.
Me.
He actually has a dice.
He actually rolls the dice.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't have dice, but if I did, I'd roll them for this segment. You have an article up at mynorthwest.com entitled WSU Amplifies Claim That Farmers Markets Food Charity Are White Supremacy in Action.
Put down your zucchini. It's racist.
Apparently, farmers markets are racist. So help me, Jason, understand this.
Well, I can't help you understand it. I can certainly tell you what folks over at the Duke World Food Policy Center are claiming. So Wazoo has this agriculture extension program across the state. This one came out of the San Juan Islands. And Jennifer Zuckerman is, I believe she's the head of this organization out of Duke University. And they basically did a seminar that was promoted by Wazoo. And I decided to check out this seminar. It was an hour long that I will never get back.
God bless you, Jason.
But it gave me plenty of crazy material. This idea that farmers markets are racist and that we have food insecurity as a result of white culture and white dominant culture is based on this idea that these are white spaces, that it was racist, you know, policies in the past that pushed African Americans in particular into certain neighborhoods, and they became these zones where you couldn't get grocery stores, and so these white people would come into the neighborhoods with either their farmers markets or a mobile food truck and hand out nutritious food. And she's basically taking the claim, one of the claims, is that, well, bringing food charity or farmers markets to these neighborhoods is racist because you're assuming that they can't do it for themselves, which is an interesting perspective, because if you don't help lower income communities or communities of color, then it's also racist because you're not helping. So they don't really tell us what they want other than they want more subsidies going to black-owned businesses. That's one of the solutions here. But that's kind of it. They don't really do anything more. And just listening to some of the what I love, she's a white lady who goes on and on about her white privilege and how we have to decenter whiteness in order to help minority communities. And she made the comment at the 33-minute and change mark that we can do this. And then she turned the panel over to two women of color who had just a few minutes each. And then they went back to the white lady to talk. She's like, come on. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. She had some real, you got to go read this article at mynorthwest.com. She had some doozy quotes about whiteness permeates the food system.
What does that mean? I don't know. And I watched this thing twice.
Is she talking about like cauliflower?
She's not talking about the color of the food. I can tell you that.
She says, this is Jennifer Zuckerman of the Duke World Food Policy Center. She says she's, quote, benefited from whiteness for my entire life at the expense of other people. With that in mind, she explored the, quote, really specific ways in which whiteness shows up in the food system and particularly in the work of food insecurity. And look, we can all be in agreement that regardless of what community you live in, what neighborhood you live in, the color of your skin, you should have access to affordable, nutritious food.
Don't say nutritious.
For your family.
You can't
Why
say
can't
nutrition.
I say nutritious?
That is also an example of white supremacy culture in action, according to this webinar, because they argue that it's white people determining what is deemed, quote unquote, nutritious. I'm not making this up.
Isn't nutritious food nutritious?
That's what I thought. But apparently it depends on the color of the skin of the person who's making the recommendation. It says that it erases certain cultural norms to, I guess, say zucchini is healthy. Here is a carrot. I don't, because I don't live in the world of unhinged activists, I don't always quite understand the worldview that they're pushing. I just hear it and mock it.
You listened to this for an hour?
Twice.
Oh, twice.
Read the
Jason
transcript
Rantz,
and everything.
Where do you find the time?
If you guys want to see the video of this, I have it available at mynorthwest.com. If you don't want to sit through the whole hour, I posted a 6-minute monologue that I would do on my radio show with nice little clips interspersed.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of graphs, a lot of graphics in this video.
Yeah. White supremacy culture is very confusing, okay. And you need these kinds of graphs. I need a... What's the Gantt chart? Is that what it is? I need one of those.
I don't know. Let's one more story I want to fit in with you while I've got you. You and I have both done a lot of coverage of the Shama Sawant recall effort. The actual recall election is Tuesday,
yeah.
December 7th. And, of course, if you're not caught up in the story, I'm assuming all of Dory's listeners are familiar. Socialist Seattle City Councilwoman Shamit Sawant faces recall. Voters in her district will vote on December 7th. There's three accusations against her that were approved by the Washington State Supreme Court. One, that she used her power to let protesters into City Hall. She did that. Two, that she led protesters to the home of Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, despite the fact it's protected under a state program due to threats from her time as United States Attorney. And three, that she misused taxpayer funds to help support a tax Amazon ballot initiative. So voters, even if they decide, you know, it's not like they just have to figure out if they believe one of those things.
Well, anyway, here's the truth.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. They could believe none or all. That's not what they're voting on. They're voting on whether or not they like what she's done in this city and who she is. And we've certainly heard from a lot of folks who are progressive. This is as much as they want to say it's the alt-right who's leading this. No, they're not.
Well, what alt-right?
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. This is being led by progressives and or leaning into the socialist side who like the policies, or some of them, but don't like the person pushing it. And that's what this has become. And it's not like if you get rid of Shamit Sawant, you're not going to get someone who thinks like her in that place. You will. This is not going to change the fundamentals of this council. But it does send a huge message that, hey, that personality that is so divisive in this city, that you're constantly going after the opposition as evil and always racist, that's not necessarily going to cut it for us anymore. There's only one result, and I've got this piece up at MindWest.com as well. There's only one result here that matters, is if she's recalled. If she's not recalled, okay, that makes total sense. This is someone who has been reelected in this district, a district that I think most people acknowledge is pretty far to the left. It, of course, makes sense that she would survive that. But if she doesn't survive this recall, that should be a tectonic shift in this city, especially so close to rejecting a Seattle City attorney who is insane. Mm-hmm. It's rejecting Nikita Oliver, who was running for council, who's very much like Shamit Sawant.
The thought had crossed my mind, though. Do you believe there's any possibility that the city council, because they'd have to pick who replaces her for the time being if she gets, you know, kicked out of office, do you believe that they would put in Nicole Thomas Kennedy or Nikita Oliver?
It would be very difficult politically for them to do that. And when I say there's going to be a tectonic shift if that were to occur, they have to note that that means their careers are legitimately on the line and they're not going to be able to get around that. So you've got now three votes on the more sane side of things. Could you get one other to switch over and say no to a Nikita Oliver? Mm-hmm. Probably. Who that is, don't know. But we'll find out.
It'll be interesting. Jason Rantz, we appreciate your insight as always. And are you getting sleep, my friend?
That's a stupid question. What are you
He's
asking
not.
That
I can
for?
Tell. I can tell by your face that you're not. I mean, you look good. A little sleepy.
Tired.
All right, that's Jason Rantz. Good stuff, my friend. Thanks for listening to things so we don't have to. Coming up, an absolutely wild story out of Australia. Three teenagers escape a COVID quarantine and a massive manhunt ensues. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. If you're mad about COVID mandates in the United States, which I would argue some people have reason to be upset by some of the mandates that we've had over the past nearly 2 years. But let me introduce you to what's happening in Australia. This is absolutely wild. It's almost like an SNL skit, but it's terrifying. It's like an alternate universe. I mean, if I had been in a coma for 5 years and woke up and saw this news report, I'd be like, what is happening? What is going on? So in Australia, there is this report from Nine News, which is a national news service in Australia, and it talks about these three teenagers. This is a news report on three teenagers who apparently escaped from a COVID quarantine camp in Australia. Here's the report.
Teenagers who allegedly escaped quarantine at the Howard Springs facility near Darwin have been taken in by police. Following a six-hour search, Nine's Talia Sav has the latest for us.
Well, we can expect to see some changes implemented here at the Centre for National Resilience after three teenagers allegedly escaped. A search spanning several hours was sparked this morning after police say the group scaled a fence and fled Howard Springs around 4:30 a.m. Authorities located the teenagers about half a dozen kilometres away. It's understood they travelled by foot and didn't mingle with anyone else. The 15, 16 and 17-year-old are close contacts of a case from the remote community of Binjari near Katherine, who all tested negative to COVID yesterday. The territory's police commissioner believes isolation and loneliness may have contributed to the trio taking off, empathising they're not used to living in their own units. CCTV will also now be increased across the site as well as bolstered internal security. The trio are expected to face a fine of $5,000 each.
You think they might be lonely?
Isolation and loneliness. First, oh, there's so much to talk about. This reporter is the most awkward. It looks like when you're watching it, one of those North Korean propaganda yes. news videos. She's standing there, and oh, that's my best Australian accent. And she has a smile on her face as she's talking about what these children have done. And this story is playing out. It looks like the scene from a news story in the U.S. where you're tracking down like an escaped convicted killer from a yes. prison. There's police vehicles everywhere. They're searching for
Did you see the little room that they escaped from?
Yes, they're searching tiny for this room. 15, 16, and 17-year-old who tested negative for the virus, but they were close contacts of a positive case, so they were at this quarantine facility. And they launched this all-out search, and this reporter is so awkward. She's sitting there smiling like the kids were tracked down
but
a
isn't
couple
that
kilometers
terrible?
Away.
They were, I mean, can you imagine if we quarantine every child that was exposed to the virus? And just you take them away from their parents and put them in a camp? Well, this is insane.
She goes, they weren't used to being in their own thing.
Oh, my gosh.
This was absolutely nuts. And I saw this and I just thought, can you even imagine? And some people are calling these teenagers heroes for escaping this quarantine facility. It's like you like left a summer camp or something. It is the most bizarre story on COVID I think I have seen since the pandemic began.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. There's a lot. But they got fined $5,000. Where are those kids getting $5,000 from?
Their parents. Oh, but you have gosh. To go watch this because this reporter, I don't know how she does it with a straight face. And I had to go look. I thought, is News 9 a government-run news agency? Because it really, really looked like that. No pushback or no questions about, this is a little odd.
Right. So, there's a report from her before they were found. And she has the exact same facial expression. Which she's talking through a smile. And it's just bizarre.
Do we have time to fit in this in and out?
Go for it.
So down in California, and we talk about, you know, maybe people are getting a little fed up with things and, you know, calling these kids heroes over in Australia. In-N-Out Burger is apparently very defiant as LA's proof of vaccination requirement starts for indoor dining. There's a threat of, in California, a fine of up to $5,000 for businesses that don't comply with the new indoor dining requirement where you've got to check somebody's proof of vaccination if they want to dine inside. But In-N-Out Burger isn't doing that, apparently, and they seem to be getting away with it for now. And
well, they've closed a store in San Francisco, I think, because they didn't want to enforce it. And, you know, I mean, I consider myself a very basic B sometimes, and I love In-N-Out Burger, and now I love them more.
Well, in October, the company had released a statement about why they were doing this, saying In-N-Out Burger strongly believes in serving all customers who visit us and making all customers feel welcome. We refuse to become the vaccination police for any government. And look, this is a legitimate concern. And you are now, as the government, making a policy, and we've discussed this here, as the government making a policy that you're now relying on private entities to enforce. And we have seen throughout the pandemic confrontations that arise as a result of businesses and employees trying to enforce mask mandates, trying to enforce, you know, vaccine mandates. And so In-N-Out Burger is basically saying, you know, it doesn't sound like they're making an indictment of the vaccine, you know, proof mandate itself. They're just saying, we're not going to enforce your mandate or
it's not our job.
Well, and also at an In-N-Out Burger, you're talking about kids, right? For
right.
the most part, who are working there, and you're going to make them like demand to see proof of vaccination. So that's what they're doing. I would be curious, though, if they're, you know, they're certainly not going to close all their locations in California. So if they're going to start to rack up fines of $5,000 per location, is that per day? And to what extent they're going to be willing to pay all that. So interesting news out of California and bizarre news, friends. Well, I mean,
at least
you know,
we're not Australia.
I pray that we never even get remotely close to what's happening in Australia.
I bet we wouldn't get remotely close to where we are now, though.
It's nothing compared to what Australia is going through. But just the lack of pushback from the media there is
it's
absolutely astounding. All right, we'll be right back.